Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 250, being recorded on the 10th of October, 2018, with special guest Anthony Chu. I'm Sajid, and on Skype with me, I have Cynthia, Kendall, and of course, our special guest, Anthony. And we'll just do a quick rundown on some of the news this week in Azure before we give the mic to Anthony to talk about a topic that I think we've all been waiting to hear about. And we'll get to that in just a few minutes. But also want to mention this is episode number 250 of the Azure Podcast, which is obviously a very significant milestone for us. I've been running this podcast for about 4 years now, and it's great to finally reach this number. So big day for the Azure Podcast for sure. Well, let's talk about some of the news in the Azure space. Cynthia, would you like to go first?
Sure. So the first thing that I want to bring to everyone's attention is that now there's bring your own key support for Apache Kafka, and now it's essentially allowing you to own and manage your own keys that are used to encrypt the data at rest. And this is a huge piece that will be helping with the post-GDPR world. So now it's currently in public preview, and we're also going to include links in the show notes for people that are interested to get more details. And another piece I wanted to talk about that I'm pretty excited about recently is that I found out you could use YAML to create Azure DevOps build pipelines. And what that means is that now even for the build pipeline, you're having configuration as code. It essentially becomes a file that you check in along into source control, and now you're able to see all the history. And then with continuous integration enabled, every time you make a change on the pipeline, it already triggers a build for you. So for people that are interested, definitely check it out.
Pretty cool. Thanks for sharing that, Cynthia. And I just want to make a quick comment on the Kafka keys item that you mentioned. So one of the things that gets perhaps lost in that article is that today with Kafka, which is like a published subscribe system in Azure, it's an open source system, but we do host it in Azure as well, along with the HD Insight service. So some customers are sensitive about the data being stored in Azure, so they encrypt the messages going in so that when they're lying at rest, because publish subscribe means messages can be lying in Microsoft's Azure data center for some period of time before they're picked up, they don't want it to be there unencrypted, so they use their own keys to encrypt it, and it's just a mess to manage. So this way now, bring your own key, they can automatically encrypt that data at rest, so the entire storage account that's being used to store that data is encrypted with their own keys. So this way nobody can access it, right, other than the customer. So that's the beauty of that. All right, Kendall, would you like to pick something from the list?
Sure, yeah. So one of the updates I wanted to cover is that we are now in public preview of the Azure database for MariaDB. And this is obviously a really neat feature, as MariaDB is one of the most popular database servers in the world. So having that option within the Azure portal now to be able to spin up your own instance of MariaDB and have that pipeline managed and, obviously used by Wikipedia and WordPress and a really good drop-in replacement for MySQL. So having this public preview is definitely a quick win for Azure users. And then also wanted to cover the fact that we're now using Azure Data Factory to get more insight out of our Office 365 data. So obviously, Office 365 has so much information about how people work and how they collaborate with one another. So being able to really leverage all of this data within Azure to get as many insights as possible and run additional analytics is really exciting. So this is all in the public preview of Microsoft Graph Data Connect that was announced at Ignite. So just thought that was a really neat update and will definitely allow us to make better use of all of that data that we have within our enterprise.
Yeah, it's nice that now the entire Office 365 graph appears like a gigantic database, right? And so you could use something like Data Factory, Azure Data Factory, just to import, export from that, just like you do any other data source in Azure Data Factory. Which is extremely cool.
Yeah, it's going to be extremely powerful too, just the amount of insights that we're able to get out of this data mm-hmm. now, that it's a little bit more accessible and a little less siloed.
Yep. So, I'm sure you guys have heard me talk about the Azure Security Center before. It's something that I'm pretty close to at my current customer. And so a couple of updates this week related to that particular service. So ASE essentially runs in the background and it looks at various logs, various signals, events. It runs a whole bunch of artificial intelligence algorithms and tries to figure out if there is a vulnerability in your system, if somebody has compromised some of your systems, or if there is a configuration error that could potentially cause a problem. So a couple of announcements they made this week in ASE. First is the Blob service, the Azure Storage accounts. Now it can monitor the Azure Storage for any like access, because typically Azure Storage, you just give a URL and anybody can access that URL. And this way they're able to monitor that access to see if someone's doing, trying to kind of get in access data they weren't supposed to, try to hack in, whatever, some unauthorized access, they're going to try and flag that and bring it to your attention. Also, when you do, what happens is that when they do detect something, they raise an alert in ESE. And today you get the alert and you do some investigation in the alert. There's a whole workflow and process associated with it. But now a new feature they've added is to actually, the customer can provide feedback on the alert now to Microsoft. Say, hey, this alert is a little misleading. It's not really correct. There was an error in the algorithm that detected it. So this way, we get real-time feedback from the back end and we're able to tweak the algorithms and get better as we go along. So that's another new feature for this for ASE. What else? Anything? Excuse me. Anything else, you guys? Oh, there's one more here with the ephemeral OS disk. This is actually pretty cool. And today, the operating system disk in VMs, it's a persisted disk, so it's typically in from blob storage or some storage account, and that's great, but it. Operating systems are hungry for disk access, especially when it comes to the operating system disk, the C drive in Windows, for example. And now there's a new feature where you can actually use the hard disk that's on the machine on which your VM is hosted. So that hard disk itself now can be used as an OS disk. And what that means is that it's obviously going to be much, much faster, because there's no, you're not going over the network to storage, to Azure Storage, to run your operating system. The downside to that is, of course, it's ephemeral in the sense that it's not persisted. So if anything happens to that machine or that disk, that particular instance is completely gone. So you have to make sure not to rely on that for anything that's stateful. It's primarily for stateless operating systems. Well, I think that's a good roundup of the news, right? Anything else that I missed?
Looks like you covered it pretty well.
We covered everything. Awesome. Awesome. Okay, so then this is the time when we'll turn the mic over to our special guest, Anthony. And Anthony, thank you for joining us today. Please feel free to introduce yourself, what you do at Microsoft, and what you're passionate about as it relates to Azure, for example.
Yeah, hey, everyone. Thanks for having me. So I am a cloud developer advocate at Microsoft. My main focus areas are .NET, Node.js, serverless, and containers. And for the last few months, I've been working with the Azure SignalR service team to kind of get their service announced as a preview at Build. and then getting it ready for GA general availability at Ignite. And also worked on the Azure Signal Service bindings for Azure Functions, so that you can use Signal Service serverlessly.
That's cool. Now, I remember using the Signal Service, back in the early days when Scott Hanselman used to work on it, I suppose, and on your own, had it on-premise and things like that. So give us an idea as to how this came about. Oh, well, first of all, let's just maybe tell our listeners in brief what SignalR is, and then maybe some of the history and how it wound up in Azure.
Yeah, absolutely. So SignalR started off as a real-time library for ASP.NET. And over the last few months or so, we've kind of created a service out of it so that essentially you can think of it as a fully managed real-time messaging platform on Azure. So you can build things like, for instance, if you have a web page that's got a dashboard that's got a bunch of graphs that they need to update in real time, stock ticker type things, chats, notifications, or through like things like mobile apps, like ride-sharing apps like Lyft and Uber, where when you open the app, you can see drivers that are close by. You can see, in real time, your driver kind of coming to you, things like that. So that's what the service enables. Behind the scenes, it's using WebSockets. A lot of people think of it as WebSockets as a service. It's a little bit more than that. It's actually, there's a couple layers of abstraction on top of WebSockets. So for instance, SignalR service will actually figure out whether or not your connection supports WebSockets. If it doesn't, it actually falls back to a couple of other technologies like service sent events and long polling. And then it also supports a pretty easy to use application model. So instead of managing connections yourself and kind of dealing with, well, this connection gets that message, that connection gets that message, SignalR service allows you to just say, I want to broadcast a certain message to all the connected clients, and it'll just do it for you. You can also place clients into arbitrary groups, and then you can send messages addressed to those groups, and the service, again, just takes care of that for you. And you can also, if your connections are authenticated, you can also send messages that are addressed to a certain user's connections. So they could be connected to multiple things like a browser and a mobile phone, and they would both get that message. So it's a pretty powerful service that we're kind of rolling out.
Now, how did this, what made you guys decide that, hey, this is something that we should offer in Azure? I know it's been previously available as a framework. What was the driving force behind that decision?
Yeah, so there's a few different driving forces. So if we're just talking about ASP.NET and ASP.NET Core specifically, when you build a SignalR application in ASP.NET, typically when you're running on one server, that's easy to do. It just works. But as you start scaling it out to multiple instances, then you have to start thinking about setting up what's called a backplane. So that it could be implemented in Service Bus or Redis or even SQL Server. But all the different web server instances can talk to each other. And that's not super easy to do. It's not super hard to do either, but it's hard to do right. And then so what you end up doing is just managing, like a Redis instance yourself or setting one up in Azure to do this. And to do this properly, you also need sticky sessions on your application as well. So a lot of work to make the scale out work well. And the service just more or less just removes that from you entirely. So in an ASP.NET app that has SignalR enabled, it's really just three lines of code that you have to change. And that now switches all the SignalR connections to the SignalR service. So so one of the benefits of that is that you can scale the service to a very large scale without touching your web app at all. And you can also scale your real-time traffic, your SignalR traffic, separately from your web application. So if your web application is doing most of the work, then you scale that up, but you can leave the SignalR service to a fairly low scale. Or conversely, if you have tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of connections to SignalR, but your web application is not really doing that much, then you scale just the service itself. So you can now scale the two pieces independently. So so that's one of the use cases for it. And then another use case for it, and it's kind of a scenario that we've kind of been asked by various customers and developers to kind of implement, is a way to kind of have serverless WebSockets. And without a separate service to handle the WebSocket connections, you really can't have WebSockets in a serverless scenario, because the whole idea of serverless is that you don't have a persistent connection. So now we have a service that handles those persistent connections for you, but you can still talk to it with something like Azure Functions to kind of have WebSockets in a serverless scenario.
And what's a good use case for that second scenario, Anthony?
Yeah, so because Azure Functions integrates so well with all these other services in Azure, and if you combine it with something like Logic Apps, it really integrates really well with a lot of third-party applications like Salesforce or Twitter or whatever it is, both in the cloud and also on-premises. That gives you a way of enabling WebSockets to any of these Azure services or third-party services. So for instance, if you want an event grid message to be broadcast to a bunch of connected clients over WebSockets, you can use Azure Functions to connect the two together. Or if you have if you want to have orders that are created in Dynamics or in Salesforce, be broadcast over to a bunch of clients to let them know that that's happened over WebSockets, you can do the same thing using Logic Apps plus Functions to talk to Azure Signora service.
Cool, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I was just thinking, just wondering how we're going to trigger the whole thing, right? The whole mechanism, because typically you'd run the Signora service inside of your ASP.NET application, and then you'd get access to whatever events or something else that you're watching for changes. Here, it's all separate, so you have to have a way to trigger the SignalR service to send out a message. Functions for that.
Yeah, and Azure Functions has triggers for a lot of things, so that fits in really well in that scenario. So we don't really need the ASP.NET piece at all. So what we're finding is that a lot of people were just standing up an ASP.NET app or maybe a Node.js app with Socket.io. Just so that they can have a server that can maintain these WebSocket connections to a bunch of clients, and then they call it with Azure Functions or something else to really kind of handle that business logic. But now you can completely remove the piece, whether it's ASP.NET or Node.js or whatever it is, and just have the service in place. So that simplifies the architecture quite a bit. And then another thing with the Azure Functions integration is that Azure Functions, because it supports C#, JavaScript, F#, and soon to be Java and Python as well, that opens up SignalR to pretty much any developer out there. Versus in the past, it was pretty much an ASP.NET only technology. And SignalR also supports clients to connect using JavaScript, as well as .NET Standard, which opens it up to things like Xamarin. So if you want to build a mobile app in iOS, Android, that uses SignalR, you can basically build that natively, and we also have Java and other clients coming.
That's amazing. So there's really completely, you don't have to use .NET at all if you didn't want to in this entire solution. You can just, the SignalR service is just, as far as you're concerned, it's a black box that does the message routing to all the connected clients, and you don't have to worry about how a specific framework or anything like that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, and it enables a whole bunch of new scenarios that weren't really possible before, especially when you're talking about serverless or just using, like, if you just want to use just everything to be fully managed or serverless in your solution, now you can do that without standing up any kind of servers or applications in the middle to handle this.
So, Anthony, this is Cynthia. So all the different words you're saying are definitely just flying over my head right now. So I'm curious, from a completely different perspective, for someone who is not familiar with WebSockets or SignalR, what are some of the business problems that you see that would kind of trigger you to think that, oh, actually utilizing Signal R would be a good use and would really help solve the problem?
Yeah, so I can talk about it in a more of a real-time kind of messaging scenario, like when that would be useful. And I would say, like, over the last few years, you know, like maybe 5 years ago, you would have web pages that were static that didn't have live updates, and it was probably acceptable back then. But now, pretty much, you know, every kind of site that you go to has some form of live updating capabilities. So it's become more or less an expectation from users that you kind of have real-time capabilities in your application, whether it's a web app or a mobile app. So something like SignalR or some other real-time technology really enables you to put that into your application fairly easily. So I kind of gave you a couple of examples earlier with, you know, like the ride-sharing apps, or if you have like if you're managing a, you know, like a fleet of vehicles, you can picture them in real time, or you can visualize them in real time on a map, for example. So it really kind of opens up your application to a world of real-time messaging wherever, you know, like in whatever kind of capacity that you want.
So Anthony, going along with that, as you continue to optimize this service offering, what are the things that we're really focused on right now? What are the priorities for making this work more effectively? And I know, especially with real-time data streams, I actually think I've worked with this on a different project before. What are the things that you think we have to improve on, or that we're seeing from customers, or the things that are really the main focus in the pipeline?
Yes, specifically to the SignalR service itself, I think we're still working on fleshing out a lot of the capabilities with the integration with Azure Functions. Right now, we support broadcasting to all connections, as well as sending messages to a specific user, assuming that they're authenticated against Azure Functions. But what we want to add going forward is support for groups as well. The service itself already supports groups, so we would need to add that to the Azure Functions bindings so that it's really easy to add and remove people from groups, as well as send a message that is addressed to a given group. And going forward, there's quite a few things that we're kind of thinking of doing. Right now, it's in about 11 regions around the world. We want to obviously add more regions and also add cross-region support to the service, so that your clients can connect to the closest region, the region that's closest to them. Also things like auto-scaling and just native integration with other Azure services as well. We're hoping to have some of that. And adding more languages, more message formats, and more platforms. So there's a whole host of things that we're looking to add to it. The service itself right now, I would say, works pretty well for most scenarios, and we just want to make that a lot better.
Would you say that there's one particular use case that we're seeing this used for a lot more often than others, or is it pretty much independent users are kind of determining the best use case?
Yeah, I would say that it's a lot of really different customers are using it for very different purposes. I've seen this kind of applied to gaming. I've talked to quite a few people who want to use it for that fleet management, or kind of like visualizing like a bunch of things or vehicles or deliveries on a map kind of scenario. IoT companies who want to basically stream their data that's kind of sent to, say, IoT hubs or event hubs, but stream that to a client that's listening. So all those have been kind of things that have come up. And also kind of mobile scenarios where I think in mobile scenarios is pretty interesting because in mobile there's already push notifications for these coarse-grained messages that can come into your app, whether your app's open or not. There's still a huge place for that. But when your app is open and you want to receive like a high volume, fine grained set of messages. So for instance, updating, you know, like an Uber driver's location, for example, there's huge applications in that space. And that's where WebSockets and SignalR service fits in.
You know, Anthony, one of the areas that I had implemented this at a previous customer was for streaming stock prices. So it was at a financial services institution, and we integrated this with their mobile app. So Signal on our on-premise at the time was streaming the latest stock prices to the mobile app. The one issue that we had then was two issues. One was we couldn't get, sometimes we had struggle, we struggled with some of the throughput, being able to pump as many, like, stock feeds are pretty busy. We get a constant stream from the stock exchanges, and we found SignalR was kind of unable to keep up with that at some point. And the second issue that we had is when messages got lost somehow, it was difficult to troubleshoot where these messages were getting held up or getting lost. When it's a service, I feel like it feels like that's going to be even harder to track down. How do we respond to those kind of comments?
Yeah, so I think there was a couple of things you hit on there. One was scale and just the ability to handle the sheer volume. So some of that you can deal with by kind of batching up these messages versus sending really fine-grained messages. And also just the architecture of SignalR itself, both moving from .NET Framework to .NET Core. We saw some huge improvements in terms of performance there. And that's what the service uses. It uses .NET Core behind the scenes to kind of create the SignalR service server. So that should be a lot better now. As well, the other piece was losing messages. I think that's still a problem that's inherent to basically the real-time messaging kind of solutions that are based on WebSockets. It's still a pretty, I wouldn't say it's a flaky kind of connection, kind of, it's as good as your HTTP connection is. And sometimes when you're like on a mobile phone in a kind of like a sketchy area, or you might lose some messages. So typically what you want to be doing is that you want to have kind of graceful reconnects. So when you reconnect, you actually ask for the latest set of messages. You also want to make sure that you're not pushing, like mission critical data down these pipes. Typically, you tend to use WebSockets for things that are kind of like, a nice to have, kind of like an add-on kind of a capability. So for instance, like for stock prices, you open it up, everything's static, but then now you get real-time updates of these stock prices. So for instance, you might want to indicate on your screen whether or not that connection is still up and running, and if it's not, then at least the user knows that they're looking at stale prices, for example. So you kind of want to deal with that on a case-by-case basis and kind of know the limitations of technologies that you're working with.
That makes sense, yeah. And what is the pricing model for this new service, or is that not worked out? Is it still in preview? Is that it?
No, it's now in general availability since Ignite couple weeks ago. So pricing-wise, you can provision, there's two tiers. So there's a free tier, and you can have up to five of those, and they support up to 100 connections each with no SLA. And there's also a standard tier, and the way that we price that is that you can kind of provision units of 1,000 connections at a time, and each unit also gives you 1,000,000 messages per day. So that's how you kind of work with SignalR service right now in terms of pricing and provisioning the service. We're also working on much higher scale versions of this, as well as auto scaling, so you don't have to worry about provisioning the right number of connections or units based on time of day, for example.
Excellent. And is it a secret, or can we talk about what the backplane is used in the SignalR service?
So I don't think we published the implementation details of it, but as far as I know, we're using Redis, which is the main supported backplane for SignalR in ASP.NET Core.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thanks, Anthony. And if you have any links you want to share with our listeners, anything that will help them get up and running, get started, right? We'll put that along with the show notes with this particular episode, so they'll have that ready to go.
Sounds good.
And Anthony, thanks so much for sharing all this information. I know Cynthia and I are newer to this technology, but it seems really interesting. So it's really cool to hear about technologies like this, and we appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.